This just in, a California abattoir, which is a fancy name for slaughterhouse, has been shut down by federal authorities for the inhumane treatment of animals. This federal action leads us to ask, can animals in agriculture be treated humanely?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 789th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Geneva who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Ricochet on the boards. Hello, Rick.
Good day, Michael.
Folks, the Associated Press headline reads, abuse video leads to shutdown of Central Valley slaughterhouse. The subsequent article goes on to describe how a California abattoir was captured by an animal rights group being inhumane in its treatment of the downer cows it was slaughtering. Now, responding to their video, a Federal Food Safety Inspection Service spokesperson said, and I quote, USDA considers inhumane treatment of animals at slaughterhouses to be unacceptable, unquote. The feds then shut the abattoir down, and that was the end of that. Fair enough, I say. Nobody I know wants to see animals being treated inhumanely. To the contrary, many of the people I know think animals to be the equal of humans. And so to hell with that California abattoir. But before we head too far down that road, let's pause for a moment on behalf of all those farmers and ranchers who grow animals for us to eat, and consider the words contained in that AP story, their literal meaning and the context in which the words are being used. And then let's ask, can animals in agriculture be treated humanely? And who better to ask than Matt Rice, who is a director of investigations for Mercy for Animals. Matt, thank you for joining us today on the Food Chain.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I was really happy to have you because I asked like about 15 different people from 15 different universities and organizations to join me in discussing this, and nobody wanted to have anything to do with me. So thank you. I really appreciate your courage here.
No problem.
Mercy for Animals. Tell us about your organization.
Well, Mercy for Animals is a national nonprofit animal protection organization. We focus primarily on farmed animals because 99% of the 99 out of 100 animals raised and killed in this country are farmed animals. So we feel we can have the biggest impact, help the most number of animals by focusing on farmed animals. And the sad fact is these are the animals that have the fewest allies, the fewest advocates, and the least legal protection. Right now, there are no federal laws that protect animals during their lives on farms. And most states specifically exclude farmed animals from any type of anti-cruelty protection. So we focus on these issues. We do undercover investigations at factory farms and slaughterhouses
and you being the director of investigations would be responsible for doing those field work, right?
Well, actually, I direct the investigators who are in the field. I don't actually go into the field myself. That's why I'm able to come on your radio show. Our undercover investigators, by necessity, their identities are kept secret. What we want to do is go in and document what's happening on these farms and these slaughterhouses when they don't think that they're being watched, and then present that information to the public so that they can make informed choices.
Good enough. Now, we always ask who pays the way. So who pays the way for Mercy for Animals? I see you have a bunch of movie stars on your website here, so that must be them.
We do have a lot of supporters around the country, including high-profile celebrities. We've contracted with a lot of different people. These are volunteers, these celebrities who work with us to push for changes in the way that animals are treated. But we are a nonprofit organization, and our money comes from donations. We're funded by donors, people who want to see change for farmed animals.
And I suspect there are a lot of people who want to see that, right?
Absolutely. Now, actually, if you look at national polls and kind of going back to what you were talking about before, most people, in fact, A recent poll shows that 97% of Americans agree that animals should be protected from needless cruelty, including animals who are raised and killed for food. So this is 97%. I think that's a shocking statistic. You can't get 97% of Americans to agree on anything, but 97% agree that animals should be protected from needless cruelty, even if they're being raised for food.
And I guess that's the subject of today's show, is what exactly do we mean by needless cruelty? And that's where we turn to the slaughterhouse incident. Now, we're seeing a lot of these incidents in which people like you and your investigators go into abattoirs or slaughterhouses and take video in a clandestine sort of fashion of animals being mistreated. And then you put these videos up and say, this is what's going on. And people see these videos and go, oh, my God. And so tell us what the heck is going on in those abattoirs or those slaughterhouses.
Well, it's nothing short of a living nightmare. This giants of the agribusiness industry have literally turned animals into meat, milk, and egg-producing machines. They've forgotten that these are animals with feelings and with needs, and they're literally trying everything they can to maximize profits, minimize costs, and it almost always comes at the expense of animal welfare. And in the video that you're talking about that led to shutting down this slaughterhouse in California, workers were dragging downed animals who were too sick or injured to stand, dragging them, pushing them, pushing water down their nostrils in an effort to get them onto the kill floor. And some of these animals who are just too far gone they'd literally stand on their mouth and nose to suffocate them to death rather than going to the expense of euthanizing them properly. So these are workers in an industry that is looking to maximize their profits, and everything else doesn't matter.
Well, how do they euthanize them properly?
Well, you know, there's different ways that it could be done. Obviously, a trained veterinarian should be on site to provide euthanasia services, and that's what we're finding in these places. They don't even have veterinarians on staff. We've done a number of investigations where the investigator was there for up to a month at a slaughterhouse or a factory farm, and never once saw a veterinarian. And when asked the management what to do with animals who were too sick or injured to walk or were suffering from open bleeding wounds, they're almost always told, leave it, doesn't matter, just let them die. And these are some of the things that we're trying to work to change, to show people that this is what's happening in these facilities, and the reason it's happening
okay,
is because
so let me ask
there's
you
no
this,
legal
then.
Protection.
Let me ask you, what do you suggest they do? Now, these downer cows, let's kind of define what they are so people understand them. They're kind of cows that are at the end of their ropes, as it were, and they just can't make it far enough to get killed, right? So they're just down.
Yeah, and you know, actually, there's an industry journal that put it pretty succinctly. They said, and it related specifically to this slaughterhouse, the problem is the dairy industry. These cows have been bred and to produce so much milk, and they're kept in a constant cycle of pregnancy because cows, like dogs and rats and mice and all other mammals, only produce milk when they're pregnant or nursing. They're kept in this constant rotation of pregnancy and birth and over milk production. Oftentimes they're injected with hormones to make them produce more milk than they would normally. These cows literally wear out after about 4 or 5 years. A cow could normally live about 20 to 25 years, but after 4 to 5 years in the dairy industry, they're considered spent. Their bodies literally can't move on anymore. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these animals become sick, they become injured, they're unable to walk, and at that point, the dairy industry sells them off to slaughter. And that's why you see where in these slaughterhouses that slaughter dairy cows, you have a high rate of animals who are simply too sick, too injured to even stand on their own. And that's where a lot of this abuse comes from.
And that's where a lot of the video comes from, right?
That's right. Yeah, and these were dairy cows, spent dairy cows being sent to this slaughterhouse.
What do you recommend that, I mean, what's the proper way to deal with these downer cows then? If not, you know, what the way they do it, which is obviously not very photographically pleasing, but what should they do?
Well, what California law says should happen is that animals who are too sick or injured to walk on their own should either be immediately treated by a qualified veterinarian And if they're untreatable, they should be immediately euthanized by that veterinarian. But what is happening in these cases is these animals are being dragged onto the kill floor and then being put into the human food supply. These are sick animals being put into the human food supply, which is not only an animal welfare issue, but a food safety issue as well.
So then the video we see is of the cruel and inhumane treatment of grabbing these downed animals and dragging them literally onto the kill floor where they can be killed rather than euthanizing them in the chute or wherever else they happen to go down.
Right.
Okay, folks.
And the reason for that is these slaughterhouses, of course, are going to lose money if they're euthanizing animals and then they're not able to put them into the food supply.
Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Matt Rice. And you were talking about animal cruelty, animal welfare, animal health. Can animals in agriculture be treated humanely? What do you think? We will be right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're trying to come to grips with a very tough question, which is how we treat our animals, the ones we raise for food, the animals of agriculture. Can we treat them humanely, or are we kind of stuck in this economic situation in which we have to drag them in very brutal fashion into the kill floors of our slaughterhouses? And it's just very, very inhumane. So we're stuck with this situation. How do we come to grips with it? In the situation in California, Mr. Matt Rice of the organization Mercy for Animals, the animal rights group that did this investigation took the video, put it out in the public, and then the federal government looked at it and said, "We will not tolerate this kind of behavior, and we therefore will close you down." So I guess the federal government has some kind of guidelines for what is cruel and what is not cruel.
Absolutely. There are some laws that protect animals, specifically in some states. In California, although there's a lot of things that California could do better, is one of the best states in terms of animal welfare. And there are some laws. And whenever there are laws that are broken at factory farms or slaughterhouses, we work and have been very successful in the past at getting prosecution against these companies. In this case, this wasn't actually our investigation. It was an investigation by another very, very good animal protection organization called Compassion Over Killing. They were able to get the USDA to pull out of the facility, essentially shutting this facility down on the basis of cruelty to animals.
Okay. Well, if I might wander off a little bit here, because I'm in considering this issue, I come to wonder if I'm not being cruel to animals. And let me tell you my story here. In the last couple of weeks, I had the opportunity to go fishing with a good friend out here in the beautiful blue waters of the Monterey Bay. And we hooked up to this beautiful white sea bass. Took me, gosh, 30 minutes or so to bring him in. You can see him on my Facebook page, which you can access at metrofarm.com. You can see this beautiful sea bass that we brought in. But he didn't want to come in, and we had to drag him in, and it took us a good half hour to drag him in. And finally, when we got him up close to the boat, the only way we could get him onto the kill floor of our boat, as it were, was to gaff it. And so both myself and my shipmate, Thomas, grabbed it with a gaff and poked a hole in it and drug it aboard. And now I'm wondering if I'm not being cruel to animals, because it kind of sounds like what that abattoir was going through trying to get the downer animals onto the kill floor. Now, am I being totally out of line with that?
Well, I think that's a good question. I think that's something that everybody has to ask for themselves. What, at Mercy for Animals, what we try to do is get people to align their own values, their own personal values, with their own behaviors. The way I look at it personally is that we shouldn't be hurting other beings, including animals, if we don't need to. And so I think that yanking fish out of the water, this fish obviously was suffering, going through a great deal of pain, because, you know, obviously it wasn't because it was ticklish. This was a hook lodged through his face, I'm sure, being dragged out of his home.
It sure didn't want to come in the boat, you know, that's for sure.
And for what? You know, there were other food options, I'm sure, that are available to you in this country. So this is something that I personally wouldn't participate in, because I wouldn't want to cause this fish that type of needless suffering when I don't need to.
So then
it's
not an
enjoyable pastime for me.
So then I was being inhumane to animals.
Well, you know, I don't like to use these kind of accusatory terms. Instead, what I like to do is show people facts, give them figures, talk about reality, and then let them come to their own decisions.
Well, let's go back to this issue then of animals and agriculture. And I guess to start off, do you think it's possible to be humane to animals that you're raising for food?
Well, I think we can certainly do a lot better. Right now, again, especially because there are very few laws protecting animals on factory farms, industrial animal agriculture, oftentimes referred to as factory farms, has developed some of the cruelest forms of institutionalized animal abuse in existence. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about these standard industry practices of confining animals in cages so small they can't even turn around, stretch their limbs, or lie down comfortably for nearly their entire lives. On pig farms, for example, mother sows are confined in gestation crates barely larger than their own bodies for almost their entire lives. Yeah. These are intelligent animals, at least as intelligent as dogs, and they literally go insane because they're just simply unable to move.
They're kind of like those CAFOs, or confined animal feeding operations, are kind of like, they're kind of almost like big city public housing units, you know, big skyscrapers where we put people in the big city and they sit in these apartments. But that's kind of an off-the-wall notion. Let me go back to this very basic place before we get into CAFOs. Let's talk about this way we treat animals in agriculture. Let's start it with the 4-H kids, who are taught from the very get-go that if you name an animal, you can't eat it.
Right, and you know, that's a very common thing. We talk to farmers all of the time, and they say, you know, you can't get to know the animals as individuals. They have to be numbers. They have to be cogs in a machine in order for them to treat it. And oftentimes, when we're talking to some of these workers, they'll tell us something that's shocking to me, which is they have to learn to hate the animals in order to go to work every day and kill them or confine them in these cages and treat them in the ways that they would never dream of treating their dog at home, their dog who they love. But they go to work every day and they treat thousands of animals these ways. And the way that they deal with that is they have to learn to hate these animals.
Really?
And that oftentimes leads to what we find at a lot of these places, which are these egregious violations.
That's kind of interesting, Matt, because having been raised on a farm, and the old kind of farm where, you know, you had a barn and we had all, it was filled with all kinds of different animals, I was raised with this notion that there was a kind of inequality, that everybody in the barn, you know, animals and people alike, were there for a reason and there for a purpose. And there was kind of a respect. And I don't think I've slaughtered a lot of animals in my life and ate them. And I don't think I've ever had any kind of disrespect for an animal that I killed. I certainly didn't disrespect that beautiful white sea bass that I drug in. On the contrary, you know, I felt honored. And yet you suggest that there's a difference then at these confined feedlots.
Well, let me start off by saying this. First of all, 70 years ago, more than half of the country was involved in agriculture and providing food. But the industrialized animal agriculture industry has literally run most of the small farmers, these individual farmers, probably as much like what you grew up of, out of business. Now 2% of the country, just 2%, is involved in food production. These are these massive industrial operations. They hire oftentimes illegal immigrants, undocumented workers. people who have no skills who to work on these farms under very low supervision, and that's where a lot of these things come from. That's where most of the animals being raised and killed for food are nowadays. And if we were able to kind of step away from that, I'm not saying that cruelty, you know, these smaller farms are, you know, immune to cruelty. I've seen some horrific stuff at even small farms before. But it would certainly alleviate some of the massive problems that we're seeing nowadays in this country in terms of animal welfare.
Well, I would like to pick up a small farm that I'm well acquainted with in the Shenandoah River Valley of Virginia, Joel Salatin's small farm, when we come back and talk a little bit about animal cruelty. But I wonder if this move from small family-scale farms to these large confined animal feedlots is not coming back to bite the industrial model in its butt, so to speak, because when we chase all the people off the farm and into the city, where they no longer are intimate with life and death and animals living and dying and that sort of thing, people in the city come to see animals differently. They come to see them as pets, and as pets, we treat animals a lot differently. We become in danger of being like the little 4-H'er who names her pet sheep and then can't slaughter it. Do you think that has a bearing on why the food animal rights organizations are becoming so popular these days?
I think it certainly does. I think that the animal agriculture industry banks on the fact that most people have no idea how animals are being raised nowadays. They actually go to great lengths to keep their practices secret from the public to the extent
that... Can you hold that? We're going to take a quick break. Folks, sure. Phone numbers today, join us, 831-479-1080. Can we treat animals humanely in agriculture? Right back. Well, folks, one time we all lived on farms, and then we all moved into the city when we took our animals with us, where they became pets instead of sources of food. And the more we have our pets, the more humane we think we should treat them, and we take that projection and think farmers should treat their farm animals the same way, or at least it seems that way. We're going to go to the phones and talk about this with Matt Rice from Mercy for Animals and you, 831-479-1080. Before we do, I'd like to pitch a quick story to Matt and have him comment on it. I have a good friend, Joel Salatin, in the Shenandoah River Valley of Virginia. Joel has the happiest cows I've ever seen in my life. And they're happy because they live on beautiful, rich blue-green grass. It's just stunning in its health and vitality, and the cows are as healthy as well. However, some are not, and those that are not tend to congregate in a little bunch down at the end of the pasture, and Joel has a way of opening his farm to all of the people of the city who want to see what his farm looks like. And some of them happen to notice that these cows are not well. And they call up the local government and complain that Joel is mistreating his cows. Now, Joel's not trying to mistreat his cows. What Joel is trying to do is build the strength of his animal herd. And he's doing that by selecting the healthiest and strongest among them to breed and allowing the weaker ones to, I guess, congregate at the bottom of the pasture and wait for their trip to the abattoir. People seeing those cows think he's being cruel to them. Well, is he, Matt Rice?
Well, I think certainly if he's allowing animals who are sick or injured to languish without any type of veterinary care, then absolutely he's being cruel to these animals. These animals are his responsibility. He's decided to confine them in this pasture, and he has a responsibility to provide them with proper care. And if he's not doing that, then yes, I'd say he's being cruel.
Okay, fair enough. We're going to go to the phones right now. Folks, the phone number is today, 831-479-1080. And we have Teresa on the line. Teresa, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, Michael.
Pleasure to have you aboard. You're an animal husbander, right?
I am, yes. Yes.
Can you treat your animals that you raise for food humanely?
Well, I have had someone from the animal welfare come over and when they found out that I was raising meat rabbits. And after seeing what I was doing, they said, we have no problem with this. But I asked the person, and they were a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that the ethic, my food ethic, is that I should ingest as little suffering as possible. But where I differ with others is that I think people are animals too. And that I think what we've substituted for that food ethic is NIMBY syndrome, not in my backyard, which means that we're willing to import products that are made under the most wretched conditions rather than have something that is finding the best solution to the issue that might be next door to us. So I want to raise that issue of should vegetarians actually be in the process of judging people who have found that solution of being ethical with their food through meat production. And vegetarians, if I'm buying soy from a plantation in Brazil that has kicked indigenous people off of their land through great brutality and violence and forced them to have a slow death through starvation in order to give their land to paramilitaries for soy plantations, is that being more ethical?
Matt?
I think those are very good points. I think obviously we should have much more local food systems, including vegetarians. I think people should visit the farms that they go to, whether or not they're vegetarians or not, and see how their food is being produced for themselves. I think that would eliminate a lot of the problems that we're seeing. I do want to point out that the vast majority of the soy that's grown around the world is actually used for animal feed. It's being fed to farmed animals, especially factory farmed animals and feedlots. So if we want to get away from these soy plantations around the world that are causing a lot of the problems that you just mentioned, one of the best ways to do that would be to remove our support from the factory farmed meat industry.
Well, then we go back to farmers who are ostensibly doing it right, like Joel Salatin, who nonetheless do have some animals that are not up to snuff. And yet, if you were to take those animals and to the vet every time, he would, of course, go broke or go bankrupt. And so city people seeing that would see it differently than people who are raised on farms. And I guess my question is, can city people who have been raised in the city away from that, from the life and death of the food chain, people who have not seen that, can they look on the raising of animals with any kind of, I don't know, business sense maybe?
Well, I think it's kind of a wrong analogy to compare farms or city people and rural people. I think the people in cities have a lot of experience with life and death and with animals. People on farms do as well, but one of the problems that you see with people who are on farms, these are people who are actually participating, especially from a very young age, in violence against animals. They become desensitized. As we talk to 4-H kids, they learn that they're not allowed to name these animals. They're not allowed to see them as individuals. And so I think a lot of the problems comes from that, is seeing these animals as things to be exploited, and rather than as individuals who are there's really no meaningful difference between a cow and a pig and our dogs and cats at home, except for the way that they're treated. And one of the reasons that they're treated so badly on farms is because they're not seen as individuals with personalities and with feelings and who can form friendships, much like our dogs and cats at home. So that's part of the problem, too.
Matt, can Teresa raise her bunnies for meat without being cruel to them?
Well, I think that she could do a lot better than some places. Certainly there are things that most Americans would agree could constitute cruelty, including confining them in cages so small they can barely move or not providing them with enough food or water. But I think whenever it comes down to it, there's no real kind way to slit an animal's throat and let her choke to death in her own blood. And so if we have other options where we don't have to cause other animals to suffer or die, I think that those are going to be the more humane options.
Matt, if I can clarify my question, it's whether we should together prioritize the worst abuses, which are happening in the CAFO production plants and that are happening offshore and that are happening to people also, and not just animals. Should we work together to prioritize those rather than going after someone who is causing less suffering?
Well, wait a minute. Can we do that? Can we do that? Or are we using CAFOs to go after Teresa for her bunnies?
Well,
folks,
can you hold on?
We're going to take a quick break, folks. This is Teresa. Can you stick with us?
Sure.
Oh boy, folks. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson. This is a tough subject. We're talking about animals, and we're talking about the animals we eat for food, and can we raise them humanely? Is it possible? What do you think? 831-479-1080. We're going to take a quick break. We will be right back. Please do stay tuned. Well, holy smokes, who's going to draw the line in the sand between what is humane and what is not? Will it be you and I looking to where we spend our food dollars? Will it be a government agency? Who will decide, Teresa, what is how to prioritize these things?
Personally, I think that someone who is producing their own food is always going to be more ethical than someone who is distant from it and who is thinking of things just as a consumer and who says, I'm just here to judge what food is worthy of me that the rest of you produce for me.
Matt?
Well, I think that we should all be aware of where our food comes from and make our own decisions. But I think what we need is more transparency and more honesty. And what I see a lot of times where it's maybe some of these smaller farmers with a lot of humane claims are dishonest claims, where we have, oh, well, all of my chickens are in these cages and a small farm and they're all very treated very well, but we neglect to mention that all of their male counterparts were ground up alive at the hatchery. So I think we need more honesty, more transparency, so people know exactly where their food comes from and they can make their own choices.
Always think that's a great idea. The more you know, the better off you're going to be. Let's go quickly now to Texas, where John is tuning in from. John, welcome from welcome aboard. Glad to have you today.
Thank you. Taking the call.
Go ahead.
I'm a professor of animal science at Texas Tech University, and the research that I conduct has to do with the welfare of animals.
Uh-huh.
Farm animals. And I visit literally millions of animals on commercial farms, and so I know a fair bit about it, and its slaughter plants, and so I think I could correct some of the things that have been said.
Please fire away.
And then maybe we can have a little discussion. The USDA is present at federally inspected slaughter plants, which is where most of the meat comes from.
So when the federal government shut down the California abattoir, what they did was they just withdrew. And by withdrawing...
When they withdraw inspection, the plant legally cannot sell meat from that plant.
Okay, I understand now. Thank you.
Shut it down. And every federally inspected slaughter plant has veterinarians on site. And they have veterinary inspectors. Not all of the inspectors are veterinarians, but they have at least one. Depending on the size of the plant, they may have many. And then they have district veterinarians that check on the veterinarians. And then they have national veterinarians that check on the district and local veterinarians. And they take these claims very seriously. So what happened in this plant, I don't know all the details about this one. I know more about the Hallmark plant that was shut down a few years ago. And what that was a failure of the USDA to enforce the rules that they had in place. But on the literally millions of slaughter plants that I visit, multiple species, the USDA is hypersensitive to the welfare of the animals, and the workers at the plant are hypersensitive to USDA being present. And the workers are trained in animal welfare extensively. They have to be now. It's completely different than it was 20 and 30 years ago.
Well, don't you think that the animal rights organizations like MAP belongs to are helping clean up the industry?
There is a way in which they're helping, yes. I think that's right. But it doesn't help to promote a misperception that, you know, this stuff is rampant. We also have to keep in mind the volume of animals that run through these plants. So a chicken plant will kill millions of chickens a week, and a pig plant tens of thousands a week, and beef plants. And so when you have that many animals running through the plant, there's a chance that one of them, once in a while, let's just say it's one out of 10,000 animals. You wouldn't be surprised, probably, if I don't know what the number really is, but it's a very small percentage that becomes injured during transport, because they're not allowed, although it's possible to do it, they're not allowed by industry guidelines to put injured or sick animals on the truck to go to market. So if they get injured during transport, what do you do with it when it comes off?
Right.
Well, at the beef and pork plants, you are not allowed to drag a down animal. You're not allowed to. So if it breaks its leg on the truck, or just becomes tired and lays down and doesn't want to move anymore, it becomes what USDA calls a suspect animal. It's suspected of having a problem. The USDA puts it in a suspect pen, not by dragging it. So in a lot of places, they put the animals on a sled, and they slide it on the sled where the animal is, there's no friction of the animal against the floor. They pick it up with a tractor and they move it. But you have a video of an injured animal being picked up by a tractor. It doesn't look very good.
Well, and that gets us to the point, Professor John. When city people see that and have no connection any longer with agriculture or animals in agriculture, it creates quite an impression.
Quite a negative impression.
Yes.
Even if very small percentage of the animals that could run through the plant.
Now, I asked Matt this question. I'll ask you. Pick up your answer when we come back from the break. Do you think that the move from industrial or from family scale agriculture, wherein people actually lived on farms, to these industrial models, is kind of coming back to bite the industrial model in the butt, in the sense that city people don't understand, can't see?
I'd be glad to tell you about that.
Okay, folks, this is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. We will be right back after this break. So much to talk about, so many people to talk about it with. Oh my goodness, what fun. Right back. Well, folks, here's the question. Can agriculture convince city people that its treatment of animals is humane? Let's ask Professor John, who's tuning in today from deep in the heart of Texas. Professor John, what do you think?
Well, there's a lot of them and not many people in agriculture.
There you go.
I pointed out. So it's very hard. He said 2% of the people in agriculture, that's true, but it's less than 1% that work with animals.
And so everybody has moved into town, and we all have pets, and the pets sleep in bed with us. And you expect us to look at agriculture and those confined animal feeding operations and think that's humane?
Well, let's just give you the one-minute history of animal agriculture in developed countries. People wanted, more than anything, in the 50s and to the present, cheap food. They wanted it as inexpensive as possible. And so animal agriculture scientists and engineers and veterinarians developed those systems. And agriculture did it. They delivered inexpensive food. Meat today doesn't cost much more. And in some take into account inflation, it costs less than it cost in 1950. That's incredible that anybody can produce something for less than it cost in 1950. So They did that. Then the consumer said, I don't want my meat so fat. It's unhealthy. So they made lean chicken and lean pork and the beef. You can get lean beef. And now the standard is different. People care about other issues that might broadly be termed sustainable. And that includes animal welfare and the impact of the animals on the environment, all these things that in some cases are counter to the economic wishes of the people. So, you know, the people that buy meat in Walmart care mostly about price. People that buy meat in Whole Foods care about how the food was raised, right?
Yeah.
We have to have product for both kinds of people, for all kinds of people.
But well, let me ask you this, Professor John. Can you convince Matt from Mercy from Animals that you're being humane in the raising of those animals?
Well, I don't really know Matt, but I think it's very difficult to convince somebody who thinks animals shouldn't be inside buildings in small spaces to think that that system is humane.
I don't think people should be in them either.
Well, there's a lot, listen, there's a lot more people live in cities than live in the country.
Matt, is it anything Professor John can say that would convince you that agriculture is being humane to animals, that it's raising for us to eat?
Well, I think that one thing that is missing from this equation is that Mercy for Animals does investigations at these places. We're actually in them. We see them with our own eyes. So a lot of the things that he's saying are, we know that to be absolutely false, or at least leaving parts of the equation out. For example, the American Veterinarian Medical Association recently released a video saying we can no longer pretend that these undercover investigations represent bad apples or isolated incidents. This is a problem that's endemic.
So I don't think you're going to be convinced, are you, Matt?
Well, and Dr. Friedlander, who was a vet with the USDA and inspected a lot of slaughter plants, actually recently complained to Congress because whenever he would bring up problems in the system or identify instances of animal abuse, he was transferred or demoted or moved around so that he couldn't point out.
Okay, one quick question. We're almost out of time. One quick question for you, Matt. Are plants sentient?
No.
All right. There you go. Professor John, thank you for joining us. All the people on the line, sorry I couldn't get to you. This has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Big thank you for Matt Rice from Mercy for Animals for joining us today when so few others would not. Really appreciate it. Hey, go out there and have a great day. And remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.